favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theater, check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder magazine or at rickshawtheater.com.
Tonight, we take pleasure in bringing you Suspense, a weekly anthology of notable melodramas from stage and screen, fiction and radio, presented each week to bring you to the edge of your chair, to keep you in suspense.
It all began about 5 days ago. I should have known sooner that something was wrong. I should have known by her eyes. It was her queer look, staring at me one moment, avoiding me the next. Well, I came home late one Monday night. Marie was already in bed. I sat at my desk, reviewing my day's work. The investigation of a fire on 2nd Avenue the previous night. A 5-alarm blaze that had completely gutted an apartment building. At some point, I fell asleep. Then suddenly, I was sitting bolt upright, wide awake, with the strange feeling of being alone in the apartment. I got up and looked in the bedroom, but our bed was empty. In the bathroom, in the kitchen, Marie was nowhere to be found. I looked at my watch. It was 2 in the morning. So I got dressed, walked out, and rang for the elevator. It was nothing, of course. It was nothing important. But my heart kept hammering away.
Good morning, Mr. Jordan. Kind of late for you, isn't it?
Yes, good morning, Stevie. Did you see my wife go down?
Yes, Mr. Jordan. About a half hour ago, I'd say.
Yes, of course. Did you see which way she went?
I sure did. She went toward 3rd Avenue. Said she was going to the drugstore.
The one over on 96th Street?
That's the one. It's open all night.
Huh. Thanks, Stevie.
Don't mention it, Mr. Jordan.
That was it. She went to the drugstore. I was worrying over nothing at all. I didn't know what to do, quite. I didn't want to follow her. But the elevator operator was watching me. So I strolled easily towards 3rd Avenue, looking up and down the deserted street. Then I saw her coming, walking towards me briskly.
Harry, what are you doing here?
Why, I woke up and saw you were gone.
I couldn't sleep. I had a dreadful headache, so I decided to go down for some aspirin.
Yes, of course. But the drugstore's on 96th Street. You were coming from 98th.
Why, I decided to take a little walk. Thought the fresh air might do me some good.
Yes, it is a nice night.
And anyway, I've only been gone about 10 minutes.
But Stevie says you left about a half hour ago.
I said it was only 10 minutes.
Okay. Stevie was just guessing, anyway. And so I let it drop. Still, I felt like something was wrong. We got into our apartment and went to bed, laying there silently in the darkness. Then Marie spoke.
You've been working too hard, Harry. Don't you think you should take a week off and get some rest?
Oh, I feel perfectly all right, dear. There's nothing wrong with me. Listen. A fire. A fire! Not far away, over east a couple of blocks, by the river, I'd say. That's my district.
Fire.
Now what? Hello?
Harry, sorry to wake you in the middle of the night. There's a bad one over near you, between 2nd and 3rd. Maybe a total loss.
Between 2nd and 3rd, Mr. Parmenter? An apartment building?
Yeah, 98th Street. 340 East 98th. I called you because I'd like you to go there direct, first thing in the morning, rather than come to the office. We need to get this fire investigation underway straight off. Okay? I'll meet you there.
340 East 98th. Okay, Mr. Parmenter. Good night.
Good night, Harry.
A fire? Over on 98th Street?
Yeah.
Was anyone hurt?
Mr. Parmenter didn't say. I'm bushed. Good night, Marie.
Good night, Harry.
Well, there it is. Gutted. I guess we'll be paying off on this one, all right.
Yeah, completely burned out. Anyone hurt?
A few, but no one dead. Luckily, they just installed the new fire escapes.
Just the walls left. That fire must have been quite a sight at the height of its glory.
Yeah, quite a sight. Those walls look pretty bad, like they might collapse at any time.
The building will have to be raised. The fire did its work well.
Say, here's the commissioner.
Hello, Parmenter. Jordan?
Commissioner? Do you have any further information?
No, not a thing.
Well, we'll take a look.
I wouldn't go in there, Jordan. Those walls look pretty bad.
Oh, don't worry. I can take care of myself.
Maybe you shouldn't, Harry.
Look, I know fires as well as anyone. You stay outside, Mr. Parmenter. I'm going in.
Come on back, Jordan!
I'm all right. Say, what's this? A glob of yellow metal. Like gold.
Did you find anything, Harry?
Not much. The fire started the same way the others did, in the hallway. The cellar's untouched, and fire works its way up.
What's that in your hand?
Oh, just a piece of metal I found. Any idea what it is, Commissioner?
Oh, probably one of those doodads they have for on baby carriages.
Yeah, I guess you're right. It isn't anything. But it was something. Somehow, I just knew it.
Hello, Harry. You're home early today.
Yes, I got done sooner than I expected.
Would you like a drink?
Thank you, no. I'll just smoke my pipe while I go over my notes from this latest fire. 4 in as many nights, and all in my district. Looks like the work of the same arsonist, too. What the devil? Marie, where are all the matches?
Oh, I needed them in the kitchen. The pilot light keeps going out.
Oh.
Shall I light your pipe for you?
Oh, thank you, Marie. Marie, where's your locket?
What?
The locket I gave you. I don't think I've ever seen you not wearing it.
Oh, well, I gave it to you.
To me?
Yes. I put it in your pocket to have fixed. The catch was loose.
I don't remember.
Well, you've been very forgetful lately.
No, I'm sure you didn't give it to me.
Maybe I forgot to mention it to you. I put it in your coat pocket, Harry. I wanted you to take it to the jeweler to have the catch fixed.
When?
Yesterday. Yesterday morning.
Then it should be in my pocket now. I wore this suit yesterday, too.
No, you wore the gray one yesterday.
Are you sure?
Yes.
I'll go take a look.
No, no. I took that suit to the dry cleaner earlier. I'll stop by tomorrow and get the locket from there.
Marie, are you all right?
Why, yes. Of course. I'm perfectly all right. There's not a thing wrong with me.
I just ask because you look worried, like you've got something on your mind.
Oh, it's nothing. I've just been having a headache.
Oh, maybe you ought to see the doctor.
Oh, no. It doesn't really amount to much.
At least let me get you a cup of tea. Why don't you sit down, Marie?
No, really. It's all right.
It'll just take a moment. Alongside the gas range, there was a paper bag full of matches. Every match in the house. Marie had told me that the pilot kept going out, and yet I'd had no trouble with it. Absently, I fiddled with the glob of yellow metal I'd picked up earlier. Then suddenly, I had a thought. Rubbing the blackened spots away from it until it was gleaming, I noticed a thin crack in the metal. Using the edge of a knife, I enlarged the crack to the full length of the piece and then pried it open. Inside was a tiny piece of scorched photographic paper with my face on it. That night, there was a fifth fire. This one over on 102nd Street. Another apartment building. Fire started in the ground floor stairwell. But as destructive as the others had been, this was infinitely worse. Completely gutted. A total loss. Just like the others.
No. No, not like the others.
What are you doing in here, miss? You need to leave. It's very dangerous. What's left of these walls could collapse at any minute.
No.
But...
I left her. I won't ever leave her again.
Her? Oh, dear God. You must be Mrs. Bradley. Your little girl... I'm so sorry.
She was sleeping, running a fever. My husband is in the army, and there was no one to watch her. I just went out for a few minutes to go to the drugstore. And then I got back, and the whole building was in flames.
Mrs. Bradley, it's not your fault. You did what any caring mother would have done in the same circumstances.
I let her die.
No, you didn't. It's not your fault. You didn't set the building on fire. It was the same pyromaniac who's torched four other apartment houses in as many nights. I should explain. I'm a fire investigator for the Herkimer Fire Insurance Company. My name's Harry Jordan.
Ella Bradley.
Pleased to meet you, Mrs. Bradley.
Mr. Jordan... Have you found any clues that might help you solve these cases?
Not a one. In each case, the fire was started under the entry staircases and spread rapidly upward. The perpetrator used materials on hand. It's not uncommon for apartment buildings to store paint under the stairs, an ideal accelerant. One strike of an everyday safety match, and within moments, the stairs themselves would burst into flames. After that... The only way out is via the fire escapes. Otherwise...
What makes him do it, Mr. Jordan?
Well, pyromaniacs have an unhealthy obsession with fire. Setting fires provides them with a sense of euphoria, a release of great tension. Given the pattern of these fires, revenge, even at a subconscious level, might be a factor as well.
Revenge? Against a bunch of strangers scattered all over the East Side? What sort of monster would do such a thing?
What sort of monster, indeed? Back at home that evening, I was filled with suspicion. Suspicion and dread that the person I loved most in the world was somehow involved in this devastating series of fires. The thought of it distracted me. So much that when I lit my pipe, the flame of the match singed my fingers before I extinguished it. For a long time, as I sat in my chair, I watched Marie subtly. She seemed extremely tense, constantly on the move, as if waiting for something. And then, when she thought I wasn't looking, her hand casually brushed across the table and picked up my matches. Marie!
Oh!
Leave the matches on the table.
But I need them. I'm rather short of matches, and the pilot light isn't working.
Still not working, eh? Is this the only book of matches in the house?
Yes.
Marie, you don't look too well. I know you've been having headaches lately. Maybe you ought to see a doctor.
I'm just tired. It's nothing serious.
Look, how would you like to go away for a few days? A vacation? I can take care of myself while you're gone. It'll do you a lot of good.
No, I don't need a vacation. There's nothing wrong with me. But Harry, there's...
Yes?
There's nothing wrong with me.
You were about to say something else.
I need an aspirin.
Marie's purse is bulging so much that it looks like it'll burst. What the devil?
Harry! My purse!
Yes, yes, your purse! We're all out of matches, are we? Well, look what your purse is filled with. Matches. At least a dozen books of them.
Well, I bought the matches earlier. They were on sale. A dozen for 5 cents.
And underneath all the matches, newspaper clippings. Fire on 2nd Avenue destroys building. Police calling 92nd Street fire suspicious. And from this morning's paper, 102nd Street blaze claims life of child. Why are you saving these clippings, Marie?
Why, to help you with your work, Harry.
Help me with my work?
Yes. I'm starting a file on suspicious fires. Maybe the newspaper articles will be useful to you in future investigations.
Why, that's very considerate of you, Marie.
Oh, it's quite all right.
As night came over Manhattan, I went to bed. Marie didn't follow. I laid wide awake in the semi-darkness, trying to think what I should do, trying to collect my thoughts. But every time I closed my eyes, I could see the match I'd burned myself with. The flame, yellow and blue, crawling along the matchstick. Then, Marie came in with a cup of steaming liquid.
Drink this, Harry. It'll help you sleep.
Why? What is it?
Cocoa. It's very good for you.
But I'm not the one who's having trouble falling asleep.
Neither one of us has been sleeping very well the past few nights. I'm having some of this myself as soon as I go to bed.
All right. Leave it on the nightstand.
Be sure to drink it while it's hot.
Yes, Marie, I will.
Good night, darling.
Good night, Marie. Cocoa, huh? At that moment, I knew. I looked around for something to pour the liquid in. There was a radiator pan. It was empty, so I emptied the contents of the cup into it. Then I laid back and waited. Waited for her to make the next move. About a half hour later, the door opened softly, and Marie tiptoed towards the bed.
Harry? Harry, are you asleep?
I didn't answer, but breathed evenly. She hovered over me for a moment, then tiptoed out, carefully closing the door behind her. As I heard the apartment door close, I dashed out of bed. Already wearing my clothes, I quickly poured the liquid from the pan into a bottle and put it in my coat pocket. Then I left the apartment and rang for the elevator. She only had a minute or two head start. I'd catch her easily. And then we'd have a showdown. Hello, Stevie.
Hello, Mr. Jordan.
My wife just went down, didn't she?
Yes, sir. Just took her down, Mr. Jordan.
Did you happen to see which way she went?
Headed north, I think. Uptown. She sort of stopped me for a moment and then walked out and turned left up Second. I had to get back to the elevator because you were ringing.
Thanks, Stevie.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan.
I reached the corner and looked up Second Avenue. She was walking north. I crossed to the other side of the street and began following her, keeping at a distance. At 102nd Street, she turned east. Down the middle of the block was the remains of last night's fire. She paused in front of the gutted building for a long time, just stood there, looking at it. Then she walked inside. I waited for a few moments and then followed her. It was pitch dark in the burnt-out hallway. Ahead of me, I could see the glow of a match. Then I saw what she was doing. She was collecting the charred debris of a baby carriage. How foolish. There wasn't anything she could burn there now. She lit another match. I watched the flame light up her face, a face so intent upon her work that she didn't even hear me approach. Marie!
Harry! Why did you...
Come along, Marie. We better get out of here before the police catch us. I took her hand, and without a word, she came along. We walked home in complete silence. When we came to our apartment house, we stopped and I rang for the elevator. In the light of the hallway, I could see her face, ashy gray, eyes bright and painful. You run along upstairs, Marie. I'll be right there.
Harry, you're not going to...
Run along, Marie. I'm going to the drugstore to get something. You'd better be here when I get back. I came home a half hour later. Sitting in the dimly lit living room, she was waiting for me.
Harry.
I had the cocoa you gave me analyzed.
I'm sorry, but I had to do it.
It was very easy for the druggist, especially when I told him what I thought was in it. Sodium amytal. That's the stuff that makes you sleep through an earthquake.
I knew you wouldn't take it voluntarily, and I needed you to sleep.
Why? So you could go back to 102nd Street? What did you think you were going to do there?
I was looking for some keepsake of that poor little girl.
Oh, so now you care about her.
What do you mean by that?
You know very well what I mean. Well, we're going to bring an end to this. Let's burn up every match in the house. We'll never bring another match in here. See? This is the first book. It's turning black. We'll do it with every last book of matches.
It's no use, Harry.
Strange this should happen to me. Me, a fire investigator. Give me the matches, Marie. All of them.
No.
Give them to me!
You'll just get more.
What do you mean, I'll get more?
You really don't understand, do you?
Oh, I understand plenty. My wife. The firebug!
What? You think I'm the one who started all these fires?
Oh, there's no sense in denying it now, Marie.
Harry, it wasn't me. It was you!
Me? Oh, God. Oh, that's a laugh. I'm a fire investigator, in case you'd forgotten.
Yes, you're a fire investigator, an overworked fire investigator who hasn't had a vacation in 5 years, and who may be so subconsciously resentful that he's burning down Manhattan, one building at a time.
So it's come to this, has it, Marie? Trying to frame me for your misdeeds? Well, whose locket was at the scene of one of the fires?
A locket that I'd put in your jacket pocket the morning before.
Ah, so you say at any rate. And I guess that night, when I caught you coming back from 98th Street, you were just going to check up on my handiwork, eh?
Yes.
Marie, we're never going to be able to help you if you won't admit that you have a problem. I don't blame you for liking fires. It's not your fault. Fires are beautiful to watch.
So bright and clean.
They burn up all the filth and dirt.
Spoken like a true firebug.
Oh, you would know. I saw that glint in your eyes as I burned up those matches. And you don't look well. So worn and tense. By now, you know that the only release is to set a fire.
That's funny. You don't look so well yourself. It's a windy night. A pyromaniac's dream.
So I should call the police now. Before it's too late.
No. Why don't we wait a while and see what the night brings?
So ends The Night Reveals by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes. Tonight's story of Suspense. Suspense is produced by Blue Hours Productions and recorded at Melrose Music in Hollywood, California. Tonight's radio drama was adapted for radio by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes from the short story by Cornell Woolrich. David Collins was Harry Jordan. Susan Eisenberg was Marie Jordan. Adrian Wilkinson was Ella Bradley. Christopher Duva was Mr. Parmenter. Dana Perry Hayes was Stevie. And Steve Moulton was the fire commissioner. I'm your host, Damon Crawl. Next week at this time, tune in again for another study in Suspense.
People are really done with politics as usual.
But then it's all about the competition.
Every Vancouverite has their own story.
The perfect time for our alternative.
Vancouver's municipal election looms. October 20th. Do you know who's running for
City Council? School Board? Parks Board?
This is a wacky municipal election, and you're going to want to stay updated. Download Seeking Office. The newest municipal elections podcast from CITR's News Collective. Find Seeking Office on iTunes and Stitcher, or wherever you download your podcasts, starting July 3rd.
I'm going away. Look into my eyes. The last Sunday of every month from 11 to 5. You're here with me at the Wise Hall Flea. Wise Hall Flea.
Tonight, we take pleasure in bringing you Suspense. A weekly anthology of notable melodramas from stage and screen, fiction and radio, presented each week to bring you to the edge of your chair, to keep you in suspense.
As rock and roll moved away from its blues roots in the late 50s, instrumental rock became all the rage as young guitarists took the next step forward. From Duane Eddy's melodic twang to Dick Dale's speaker-shredding reverb to the radio-friendly picking of the Ventures, instrumentals became a staple of the music charts, particularly in Southern California, where the surf guitar reigned supreme. But it was a short-lived success, and with the advent of the British invasion, instrumental bands became yesterday's news. It was not the death of the genre, however, for even though the public moved on, the musicians those pioneers inspired kept their memories alive. As a result, many of them have experienced a renaissance of sorts. The Ventures still have millions of fans worldwide. Dick Dale continues to record and tour, now with his son. Duane Eddy is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But not every pioneer from those halcyon days received a happy ending.
Evening, Georgia. It's morning.
Good evening, Mr. Kincaid. Yes, he's here, though you might want to think twice before going in there.
He's in one of those moods.
Well, I'll take my chances.
It's your funeral. Mr. Sloan, Mr. Kincaid is here to see you.
Great. Just great. Send him in.
Yes, sir. Are you sure you want to go in there?
Not like I have much of a choice.
Good luck, Kevin.
Thanks, Georgia. How you doing, Morty?
Oh, just fabulous. Never better.
Any luck finding me any gigs?
Nope.
Morty, it's been over 8 months. Look, I'm not proud. I'll twang for spare change at a subway stop. Maybe I'm not the player I was 40 years ago, but I can still play circles around a lot of these kids today. Morty, you gotta find me something, anything.
No can do.
Please, Morty, don't make me beg.
Work's not there. Sorry.
Morty!
Enough already! I told you no, and I mean it.
Murray always found me gigs. Even in the leanest years, when I was in the drunk tank more than on stage, your dad was a good man.
Look where it got him. An empty wallet and an early grave.
I was a good draw once. You remember how I used to pack him in at the Palladium? Maury used to bring you backstage when you were little. Still got a showman with your little footprints all over the top of it.
Yeah, you were a good draw. 40 years ago.
Just one more. For old time's sake, please.
What few gigs I've managed to get for you over the last 5 years have been for old time's sake. Times are hard, Kevin. I can't even find work for our up-and-coming acts. I'm sorry, I really am, but you are not the vibrato kid anymore. You haven't been since Jolene... for a long time. The days of the instrumental are long gone. The Champs, Santo and Johnny, Link Ray, they ain't coming back. Neither are you. Look... why don't you just hang it up? You've had a long career. You must have a little money stashed away.
You'd think so, right? But nope. A little money, but even less time till the old ticker stops ticking.
How long?
Yeah, a few months, maybe. Less if I don't take it easy.
Look, come back next Tuesday. I might be able to swing a... retirement performance for you. For old time's sake.
That's okay, Morty. You don't worry about it. You're right, times have changed, and I'm no more use than teats on a bull. You know, you're a lot more like your dad than you like to admit.
Yeah. Which would explain why my bank account is always empty.
Goodbye, Morty.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, maybe play the Palladium one more time, you know? Back where it all began, and God willing, I might even conjure up an audience.
Closed. What do you want?
Just a moment of your time. Are you the stage manager?
Yeah. Who wants to know?
The name's Kincaid. I used to play here way back in the day.
What's that to me?
Well, I just want to go on stage and play one more time. I'll pay you for the trouble.
How much?
250? It's every penny I have.
Let's see it. 2 hours.
It's been a long, long time since I stood on your stage, old girl. Place hasn't changed much. Just hard used is all. Believe me, I know the feeling. That right here is where my career began. And, where I met Jolene. Hello, everybody. Listen up, I'd like to dedicate this next song to the young lady in the second row, stage right. I never believed in love at first sight until just this moment.
Murray, how did I do tonight?
You knocked him dead out there, Pally. You're the king.
I think a certain Mr. Presley might have something to say about that. Thanks, Murray. I wouldn't be here without you.
Any schmuck could do what I'd do for you. You're the one with the talent. You're the vibrato kid. Take it to the bank. 6 months from now, you'll be bigger than Link Ray.
Bigger than the Rayman? I'll believe it when I see it.
Just you wait, kid. Just you wait. Listen, there's some girl who wants to meet you, refuses to leave until she does. She's a real dish, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really. Guess that love at first sight line must have worked.
Well, a fella can't fish without bait, right?
Right. So you want to meet this girl or not?
Well, I can't very well disappoint my public, can I?
I'll send her over.
Mr. Kincaid, my name's Jolene. I'm Jolene Baxter.
Kevin Kincaid, Miss Baxter. A pleasure to meet you. Real pleasure. How'd you enjoy the show?
Oh my gosh, it was amazing. I mean, I've got your records. I must have played them 1,000 times already. But seeing you do the songs in person is just... oh, it's so much more. It's... wow.
Well, seeing you out there in the crowd made me want to play like I've never played before.
Oh, truly, Mr. Kincaid?
Truly, Miss Baxter.
So, did you mean what you said? I mean, before you played that song about not believing in love at first sight until just now?
I surely did, Miss Baxter. I surely did.
I feel the same way, Mr. Kincaid. When I first saw you on stage tonight, it was like... oh, I'm sorry. I must sound like a foolish schoolgirl. Anyway, you probably hear this sort of thing all the time, but...
Miss Baxter, I truly don't. And even if I did, I wouldn't want to hear it from anyone else but you.
Truly?
Truly.
So why don't you kids go get something to eat? It's on me.
Thanks, Murray.
Don't mention it. Now stop standing around looking all doe-eyed. Go, have fun. But no beers, okay? We're in the studio tomorrow.
Gotcha, Murray. Shall we, Miss Baxter?
Yes, Mr. Kincaid. Indeed we shall.
Hey, baby, how'd you like the show? Yeah, I'll talk to you later. Oh, wow, look who it is, my two biggest fans.
You know it, Pally.
What are you doing here? I didn't expect you until Philly next week.
Oh, well, we thought we'd surprise you.
Yeah, well, I've got to make a call. See you both in a few minutes.
So, when did you and Murray get into town?
Just after 7.
Did you catch the whole show?
Mm-hmm. We did.
Okay, Mrs. Kincaid. We've only been married for 8 months, but it's long enough for me to know when something's on your mind.
Oh, it's nothing.
Come on, honey. If you can't tell me, who can you tell?
Kevin, when did you start including that line in your show?
That line?
That love at first sight line. The one you used on me the night we met.
Whoa, hey. First of all, that wasn't a line that I used on you. It truly was love at first sight when I saw you. And I fall for you over and over again every day. As for using it in the act tonight, the promoter here, he was in the audience the night we met, and he thought it'd be a cute gimmick, so he asked me to include it in the show, that's all.
But who was that girl? Murray and I both saw her in the second row.
The promoter's daughter. Yeah. She's a plant. I mean, get it? I just pretended like I was dedicating the song to her. It was just for tonight and last night. And if it bothers you, I will never include it in the act again. Okay?
Well, okay. Oh, I'm sorry, Kevin. Here I am acting like the jealous spouse, and you've never given me any reason to be jealous. It's just that... I love you so... the thought of you with another woman, it just...
Jolene, honey.
I mean it. If you ever cheated on me, I'd leave you. I couldn't live with it, Kevin. I just couldn't.
Mrs. Kincaid, why would I ever want another when I have you at home waiting for me?
Oh, Kevin.
Kids, got some good news. 5 new dates on the tour, so we're celebrating. Jolene... if you want to powder your nose, I'll go over the specifics with Kevin. And then we won't talk shop at all for the rest of the night.
It's a deal. I'll be right back.
Look, I don't know what load of hooey you peddled to Jolene, and I don't want to know.
Murray.
Don't bother to deny it. I'm hearing things, Kevin, and I don't like what I'm hearing. You keep chasing skirts like you've been doing, and you're going to lose her. You got me?
I got you, Murray. And I promise, no more.
Okay. Now let's talk over those new dates.
Murray! Here to welcome me home? What? To what do I owe the pleasure?
Where have you been?
Oh, I've been on tour, of course. 15 dates in the Midwest. You should know. You organized it. I just left Minneapolis.
You know that's not what I mean. Your flight was supposed to have gotten in last night.
Well, I missed my flight. Rescheduled for this morning.
So who was it this time?
Who was who?
The girl. In the second row. Stage right. You know. I never believed in love at first sight until just this moment. And you reek of booze. Jesus!
Look, I am home now, and Jolene doesn't need to know about any of it.
It's too late for that, Kevin.
What?
The girl you got pregnant down in Austin. For sure. Some others. She knows about them, Kevin. Knew about them.
What do you mean, knew? Murray. Murray, where the hell is Jolene?
She left this.
I meant what I said. Goodbye. What? Jolene? She's gone?
You could say that. Overdose of sleeping pills. Cleaning lady found her this morning. I'm sorry, Kevin.
I killed her.
Kevin, no. Don't do this. Look, the police say it was probably accidental. Wait! Kevin!
Your own life. As the preacher used to say, that's a terrible sin. You might be in hell because of me. Well, my heart's not gonna last much longer anyway. Gotta make this right. There's only one way to do that. Dear God, please forgive me for what I've done and what I'm gonna do. I got no idea how to do this, but here goes nothing. I call upon you, Lucifer, O Prince of Darkness. Come and I will bargain my soul to you.
Looking for me, Vibrato Kid?
You Lucifer?
The one and only. There's something you wanted?
Yep. Information, for one thing. There's something I need to know. It's about my Jolene. She's in hell, isn't she?
Suicide's pretty much a guaranteed one-way ticket.
I want to make a square deal. Me for her.
This isn't a used car lot, guitar man. No trades. Particularly when the trade-in isn't half as valuable as what I already got.
Then what about cutting heads for her? I win, you set her loose. I lose, you get me.
What makes you think I won't get you anyway? Given the life you've led, the odds are stacked in my favor.
But it's not a sure thing.
No, it's not. Yet. Okay, tell you what. You beat me, and it'll be like Jolene was never even in hell. Agreed?
Agreed.
But understand this, Kincaid. When you lose, you're mine immediately. No drawn-out goodbyes, no deathbed repenting. You're going straight down, post-haste.
Only if I lose.
You already lost. You just don't know it yet. You know how this works. I start, you follow. When you can't keep up any longer, you lose.
Talk is cheap. Let's play.
Something paining you, vibrato kid? You lose, Kincaid. And guess what? Jolene's death really was an accident. She was never in hell, but you will be. Time to go, guitar man. So Ends Ebb Tide by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes. Tonight's story of Suspense. Suspense is produced by Blue Hours Productions and recorded at Melrose Music in Hollywood, California. Tonight's radio drama was written especially for Suspense by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes. Christopher Duva was Kevin Kincaid. Adrian Wilkinson was Jolene Kincaid. Daniel Hackman was Morty Sloan. Steve Moulton was Murray Sloan. John C. Alzadek was Louie. Dana Perry Hayes was Georgia. And Damon Crawl was Lucifer. Guitar music provided by Buddy Doogie as Kevin Kincaid and Jason Lee as Lucifer. I'm your host, Damon Crawl. Next week at this time, tune in again for another study in Suspense.
Radio show
is brewed fresh and served fresh at the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite
indeed.
Dunkin' Donuts, serving sweet treats from the pop underground. Thursdays, noon to 1.